But we're treated in another way this afternoon. Jill has come amongst us. Jill came as a delegate last time and mixed with us, and we thought, you know, she's all right. And got to see her at one of those little TED Talk things that we produced as part of Leaders to Go last time. And you can have a look on her website and find it there. You can have a look at on some obscure Leaders to Go YouTube website and see it there, see the others, and your own if you produced one last time. And we saw her passion. We saw her ability to present, and we asked her, and I think she's come along to, she registers one of the delegates again, so she's mixing it with us as well, and we appreciate that very much. She'll be able to get to chat to her over the 4 days. But we would love to hear her heart on intergenerational stuff. We thought that would be good. And chatting to Jill, you do hear her heart and her passion. And coming from New Zealand, I've learned that she originally South African, Kiwi for the last 29 years and been adopted by them, I guess. They haven't kicked her out. That's good. And can get to the Australian sort of thing. So it's that interesting mix of backgrounds and dialects and accents, etc. So you work it out. But part of the Presbyterian Church in New Zealand, and 300 of those congregations are interested in what she's having to say and have engaged with her, or at the very least she's engaged with them to deliver, to kind of harangue, I guess, to convince, to talk to. And when they've said yes, willing to hang in there and help and resource and benefit, be a benefit to them. So we're going to ask Jill to come now, and I'm going to pray, and we're going to just be open to God and God's word through her. Loving God, we thank you for your servant Jill, and ask that as we open our hearts to you, that your words would flow through her to us, to our context, whether we're an organisation, whether we're a local congregation, small, medium, large, whatever the context is, we pray that you would speak into that, that you would help us to hear the word that you have for us today. We pray that you help her by your Holy Spirit, and we pray in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Amen.
Well, good to be here. What beautiful weather. It was cold and rainy last time, wasn't it? It's a bit like New Zealand last time. Hey, the last time I was here 2 years ago, I must say the first day was sunny, and we went out into groups, into our small groups to get to know each other. And firstly, may I say apologies to my small group that I wasn't there for the getting to know you, but we had a little bit of a crisis on the PowerPoint, it crashed, so we had to fix that. But anyway, we were out in our small groups, and we were out on the lawn in the sunshine, and I was sitting on a nice boulder, and someone was sitting next to me, and there was about two Kiwis, not real feathery ones, but ones like me, sitting on the lawn, and an Australian. And I looked up, and I saw, and I'm not exaggerating, a snake this big behind the Kiwi. And I said, Hillary, don't move, but there's a really big snake behind. And she went, yeah! And the snake luckily went that way. So I went for a walk this morning, and I took a stick, and I'm going, bang, bang, bang. I don't know if it helps. You'll have to tell me. I haven't been a South African for a very long time, so I've forgotten how snakes operate. So watch it if you're lying on the lawn in the sunshine. Yeah, so another thing, I was at lunch, and Tammy said, how are you doing? You know, how are you going? And I said, I'm a little bit nervous about all those Australians. She said, what? What Australians? I said, well, those Australians. She said, why are you nervous of Australians? I said, well, I don't know. They'll be thinking, who's this Flossie from across the ditch coming to tell us something?
Really nice to you, okay?
And be really nice to Rob, because he's now my tech man, because my computer crashed, so that's now on his computer, and we've got loads of video clips and things, so let's hope it all goes according to plan. So, I'm going to start with a story, because I do like stories. So, I share this story in New Zealand. And you see, our national religion is rugby. Man, we love rugby. Let me say we, in the kind of royal we, because I actually don't quite fit into that. That's probably the only way I don't really qualify to be called a Kiwi. However, when the All Blacks are playing on a Saturday night, If they lose, the state goes into serious grieving, don't they, Rob? Like serious grieving on Sunday. No one comes to church, not that anyone comes to church anyway, but even less come to church and people get into complete and utter grief. However, I wanted to tell this story. I was at Ignite in March in Brisbane, and I was sharing some of this workshop with some of the pastors there. So I wanted to tell this story, but I had to sort of like, you know, acclimatize, like get myself enculturated, because although I can't tell a story about the All Blacks and the Springboks, can I? Because that just wouldn't be PC. So I got a bit of a lesson from those pastors about the footy. Is that right? The footy. It's a bit like Phil says, Australia without an L. Apparently, footy is like football without a T. Is that right? Footy. Okay, so they told me, you know, which of the two big teams that play and what stadium they play in. But, of course, we were in Brisbane at the time. And you're from all over the place. So you somehow have to tell me, what is the stadium we're going to use in the story for this footy match? And who's playing? Which two teams are playing? It's a big country. Yeah.
There's
not a lot of
states.
Exactly. Should we choose
this state? Saints versus Demons.
Who? So it's Queensland. Apparently it's called the State of Origins. And it's Queensland versus New South Wales. And what stadium are they playing?
Suncorp Stadium.
Suncorp Stadium. Okay. This is going to take half my workshop time getting this right. Okay, so the big game is coming up, the big footy game. Okay, Queensland versus New South Wales at the Suncorp Stadium. And you and your son or your grandson or your daughter, whoever, okay, someone you love the footy. You are so excited because guess what? You have got tickets to the footy, the matches of all matches, New South Wales against Queensland at the Suncorp Stadium. Man, you can't stop talking about it. And finally, Saturday? Do it on Saturday? Or Friday?
Sunday.
Sunday?
No, Wednesday.
Wednesday. Well, finally, today. How can you pick up? They say that we're like, from, you know, they say we're the same people when you go to six places. Anyway, so finally, the night comes. And you pack your backpacks full of food and drink, and you've got your, you know, if you, I don't know if you need cardigans and jackets here, but if you do, you've got those two. And you get there really early because you want to get a car park. And you get out of the car and you head up to the gates. And you're so excited. And your son or your daughter or your granddaughter or your grandson is so excited because this is a shared experience, a significant moment that you two are going to have together. When you get to the gate attendant says, "Oh, good evening, madam. Good evening, sir. Just one question. How old is your son?" And you say, "Oh, my son, he's 10. He loves the footy. And we are so excited." And the attendant says to you, "10? Oh, okay. Well, he needs to go to stadium, the grandstand number 10 for Santa Kids Zone, because he's going to be watching the footy from Kids Zone." And you go, no, you don't understand. This is something we love to do this together. No, I'm sorry, sir, you don't understand. We have experts in the grandstand game. Experts who know all about footy. And they will teach him the rules. They'll teach him everything they know. And you, sir, can choose any of the other grandstands because that's for adults who already know. So is this the way we watch the footy? No, you see, we love it and we lament together and we abuse the ref together and we cheer together and then we never ever stop talking about it together, do we? So why do we do church this way? How did we get to this place of the silos that we have in our faith communities? Well, we have huge Western cultural, by the way, I'm sort of moving around, I sort of do that. Does it matter with this thing? Do you need this? Because I've got quite a big voice, haven't I? Tell me if I might just keep still, okay? It's quite hard, but just tell me. I could take it with me. Tell me if I need it. So, you know, our whole Western society has become very much around individualism, hasn't it? In the whole sort of postmodern and modernism. And we've become more and more kind of sort of influenced by consumerism and individualism and even say greed. And even so much so that it's affected our salvation theology. You know, in the early church, people were not saved into a personal relationship with Christ. People were saved into community. Together, we were in relationship with Christ. So even our salvation theology has come around individualism. It's like, oh no, you just need a relationship with Jesus. Now, I'm not saying you don't need a relationship with Jesus, but that's how individual it's become. The whole tripartition of society, that's very much a Western thing, where we divide society both institutionally and spatially and socially. So, you know, we often live according to age, we work according to age, we educate according to age, and that's also something that's influenced very much what we do in the church. Actually, interesting, we're having coffee. We had to go and have coffee in one of the cafes with Phil in Helensburgh because he had to start his research so he could share it with you. And Terry was telling us he's just been on a big trip overseas, and he talked about, was it in China, Terry, where they were talking about how qi, you know, the word qi means spirit and source, really. And he said they had talked about how it's almost become an acronym for consumerism, hedonism, and individualism. And I thought that was a great little metaphor for, or anagram for it, that here we are, you know, in our work, trying to help people engage with spirit and know spirit and be filled with spirit. And actually we are constantly challenged by that, the qi of Western society. See, in the 70s and 80s, we were very, very much influenced by educational and psychological models of looking at ages and stages and development, all that kind of thing. And that's also very much a modern phenomena. By the way, my PowerPoint will be available to anyone who wants it. Some people like to take notes because it helps them focus, but anyone who wants these slides, I will send it through to you as a PDF, so you can, you know, if you want to sit back, you can as well. Also in the 70s was the success of the big parachurch organizations like Youth for Christ, and they did a great job, and they recognized that actually young people, you know, can really grow in faith when they come together and do cool things together and learn together and play together. And so this whole time that we're going to have in the next 2.5 hours is not saying that has no validity. That definitely does have validity, and it's worked very well. However, it's not the only way to do faith. And research does show that young people who only ever worship with people their ages through their childhood and teens don't remain in the church. Okay, so only 10% of people who go through that kind of formula stay in the church. And what about consumerism? You know, that's a very kind of American thing where it's become like the funnest hour of the week, you know, as long as you've got a great center for the children and playgrounds and Disney-style kind of thing, the parents will come, they'll drop their kids off, and it'll be the funnest hour of the week. And ease. If you ever talk to any pastor or minister and suggest that we have an intergenerational worship, they'll probably roll their eyes because, you know what, when you have to use all the senses and you have to be creative and you have to create opportunities for people to engage and interact, it's so much harder than just writing a sermon and just getting the music team to do the music and, you know, following the formula. So it's much easier just to do it that way. And this is a real live story from New Zealand. It's No Space. I was talking to a church about their children's ministry, and they were asking my advice on curriculum. And I said, well, just tell me a bit about your church. You know, when does it start? What kind of worship service is it? How long are the children in worship for? What happens during that time? And, you know, so forth and so on. And he just looked at me and said, no, the children aren't in worship. The children go to the hall. Now, this might be the norm for some of you, but it's not the norm mostly in our context. And I said, oh, you mean the children don't go into church at all? Like, not with their parents, nothing. No children in church. He goes, no. I said, why not? Now, for me, that's not a dumb question. Like, why not? Have you not read the research? You know, he said, there's no space for them. I said, there's no space for kids. No, there's no space. And I just thought, oh, my goodness. You know, like, I'm not hearing this just as physical space. I'm hearing this as something else. So there's no space for kids. So, intergenerational. What is that? Now, what do you think comes to mind if you asked anyone in your church, so what do you think intergenerational church would look like? What would they say? Craft table down the back, yep.
A program for each generation.
So you'd split off and the children were going to that and the teens were going to that and the, yep. Okay. Adults have to do kids stuff, that's right. Action songs and dramas I don't want to do. And that's right. Don't go if there's going to be one of them. Now, it's in the past, it's kind of got a name, hasn't it? The all-age service. And I was doing a consultation with the church, and we were talking about how kids-friendly is the church. And we were talking about how do you engage and involve and invite children into worship. And she said, well, we do have an all-age service once a month. I said, oh, tell me about that. And she said, well, you know, the kids put on something, we work on it for 3 weeks, and then we go in and we present it. And I said, oh, so how does that go? And she said, well, it's really hard work, because she was a children's ministry person. And I get quite stressed about it. And I said, no, what are your numbers like that week? And she said, oh, a lot of people stay away. I said, we can't bear the all-age service. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And what about the children? Do they like the all-age service? And she said, come to think of it, my kids hate it. They say, oh, it's not all-age service, is it? I said, so why do you do it? So we're going to unpack a little bit as we go. This is a quote I read in one of the many books I've read about this. The all-age service, the service with something to offend everyone. This is what Alan Ross say in their book called Intergenerational Christian Formation. Now, if you're interested in exploring this topic more, that is one of the best books written, I think, in the last 10 years. It's just practical, it's theological, it's everything. So if you're more practical than a theological person, you can skip about and say what you like, but it's a very good book. But they say intergenerational is one or more age groups doing something together. So it's quite a loose kind of definition. So if you think about your own context, how many generations is under your roof on a Sunday morning if that's when you worship? Could it be up to 5? So that's what happens in our Western churches. Many of us have up to 5 or 6 generations under the same roof. In fact, we'd have to say that we're probably one of the few organizations left in the Western world where there's that range of ages under one roof at any one time. But we, like society, have also segregated spatially, institutionally, in society or socially. So while we have a unique claim to intergenerationalism, most of us have bowed to social conventions, and we now segregate, and I think we ignore the biblical mandate to be the whole body of Christ. So who would like to read this to me? Rob, I'm going to pick on you because I know you.
The church is the last place in society where all 5 living generations gather together under the same roof every week. Isn't it a shame that these marvellous gifts are often segregated from each other? The moment the elder and child enter most churches, they are whisked away to different rooms. What does the elder have to give? Time, experience, wisdom, love, perspective, patience. What does the child have to give? Wonder, energy, innocence, honesty, curiosity, joy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if our church had a time and place set aside to let the elder, the child, the parent, the teen, and everyone in between share and celebrate faith together? Wouldn't it be radical if we chose to be the countercultural and kept the generations together for an hour or two each week? What if we could return to our roots and become once again be a countercultural movement?
So this is Rich Melheim. Has anyone come across Rich Melheim from Faith Incubators? He's done his rounds in Australia many years ago, and the Lutherans use a lot of his material. He's a great guy. He's very controversial in that he just says it like it is. And he's also extremely informed. So he does immense research on the topics that he teaches, and one of them is, he calls it cross-generational. I prefer the name Inter, and we'll look at that in the next minute or so, the definition. But he also has a movement called Killing Sunday School. So you can see he's a little bit of a controversial chap. But if you go, he's on Facebook, that's his movement, and there's some really good stuff that gets posted up there. You've just got to sort of, you know, breathe every time you read. He's killing Sunday school. So for the purpose of our time together today, I thought it would be quite good to just look at some definitions, okay? Like when I talk about cross or multi or intergenerational, why do I talk about it like this? And so I'm using the word intergenerational for what we're talking about today. So really cross is when many generations are under one roof, but they're separated for basically everything, okay? And all generations are considered, so we do provide for them. It's not we don't provide for all the generations, but, you know, according to, like, Rudyard Kipling said, never the twain shall meet. And some generations may be deemed to be superior to others. In other words, they might be deemed to be more spiritual, to know more about the game, all that kind of stuff. And there's no real desire or even belief that we can be transformed by each other, that we can actually learn from each other and meet God in each other. So if we look at multi, we'd look at churches where generations worship alongside each other for some time, and effort is made to accommodate all ages until they then separate for their own learning. Generations don't get to know or appreciate each other generally, but rather sort of just tolerate each other while they're in the same space. People may celebrate each other's presence, but their interactions are generally superficial and polite. And some people are actually more equal or powerful than others. And then in an ideal world, we'd have an intergenerational church where relationships across the generations are prioritized and fostered. All ages worship together, learn together, pray together, serve together, and play together. Intergenerational is a way of being. It's about the culture. It's about the ethos of the church. And it's most definitely intentional. Can't happen without that intent. So I want you just to break into groups of about, I don't know, four or five. Just find some people around you. And just think about your own context. And how would you define your church? I wouldn't imagine it would have some very clear boundaries, but what are the elements that you find in your own church? And if you are like me and you work with a whole lot of churches, either think about your own home church or think about the churches that you work with. You know, what's the norm, really? So let's have a couple of minutes to do that. Right. So there's lots of animated discussion. Did anyone feel that their church definitely fitted into one category, or was it a kind of a mix of, mostly a mix? Bits here and bits there. Yeah, so it's always hard to define something, isn't it? It's more about ideals or non-ideals, I think. Okay, so why? Why would we be intergenerational? Well, I think it's God's intent, and I'd like you to think about some scriptures that might suggest to you that that's God's intent, that we all come together, that we learn together, that we share together. And I was interested, Mark Griffiths has just been in New Zealand, and he always talks about how Deuteronomy 6 was actually aimed at what's called the Mishkapor, which is the tribe. So it wasn't, we often interpret it as a scripture for parents. You know, tell your children as you walk along the road, as you drive to netball, as whatever, which is true. However, it's also to the tribe. Tribe, you are responsible for passing on this faith. And my friend Rich Melheim, again, always says, does anyone here know any Hittites? And then he goes on to, and what about Amalekites? And then when we say no, why? They forgot to tell their children their story. So that's his kind of little line, which of course. Octogenarians. Let me warn you, if you're looking remotely bored or sleepy, I'm going to pick on you. No, I picked on her because I knew her. Yeah, so there, that's exactly what Terry was pointing to, is that whole sense of everything was done in community. So this is what John Roberta says, the other very good book, which is here as well, on called Generations Together. Intergenerationalism is our Christians' past and future. So why else? Well, we know that Christianity is a practice. And part of becoming Christian is practicing it. And when we practice it, we learn to do it better and better and better. Just like, as Phil would say, when we drink coffee, we get to appreciate it more and more, which is never going to happen with me, is it, Phil? I'm a lost cause. So yeah, this whole thing of, you know, children learn by watching and imitating adults and by projecting themselves into imaginary worlds. Clergy must make worship truly accessible to children and educate parents and other parishioners to see children as fellow worshippers, not as intruders who have to be hushed or distracted so that adults are left free to pray. Another very good book from Gretchen Wolf Pritchard. So it's part of becoming Christian is it's a social act as well, where we observe and we imitate. And Phil talks about being at the feet, putting your children at the feet of the culture you want them to embrace and become part of. So a little bit of a light entertainment for you to think about that a bit more. To imagine what that little boy will be doing as he grows up and what he'll love. But I also quite like the kind of inherent kind of depth of don't let me down. And do we let our children down when we fail to be with them as a community of faith? So, this is another reason why we should be an intergenerational church. And this is also from Rich Malheim. He talks about a new era. And I thought I would ask Terry to read this one to us because he's such a beautiful voice.
Oh, we've got glasses. So this is a story from Richard Allen I thought you'd enjoy.
Television era, church, or a new era, church? We've entered a new era. According to Rich Malheim of Faith and Debates, 2005 was a watershed year in the history of human technology. Yes, it came and went without making a radar screen of the church. This was the year teenagers in much of the developed world started spending more time on the internet than on television. So why is this so important? It's important because children and teens of this post-television generation have a different attention span, different learning style, and media consumption. Their world is what Dr. Leonard Sweet calls for the last 500 years, since the widespread use of the Gutenberg press, we've been living in a one-way information flow world. We responded to one-way radio, television, lectures, sermons, and more. We were satisfied to just listen and consume the content that professionals produced for us. And we, as the audience, had no bearing on what was being brought or taught to us. Audiences, viewers, students, and parishioners were treated mostly as spectators in someone else's show. And this naturally gave rise to what Rich Melheim describes as the television era church. In the television era church, the desired product is a polished, professional performance and a great and engaging show. They entertain and we watch.
is the unspoken rubric. In the television era church, participants are told what to say, when to say it, what to sing, when to sing, when to stand, when to sit, when to shake hands, and when to kneel. And when television era church works for many of us, sorry, and while television era church works for many of us, the one-way producer/consumer social contract is null and void to everyone under the age of 25, and many over 25. In our worship models, educational methods, youth ministries, family ministries, and every encounter of church are built as television era offerings, we will be less and less effective with more and more people from here on out. If the audience isn't more than an audience, if their questions, knowledge, cares, and experiences aren't drawn into the core of the worship, if what we design doesn't engage this post-television era, people in an experience that they help shape, we will be teaching, reaching, and preaching to a smaller and smaller crowd every year.
Now that's a bit kind of humbling, isn't it? I was at a meeting at my church, I'm an elder of my church, and we had a meeting to talk about decline. Now, we worked out that actually our church has maintained its numbers for 15 years. So in 2001, I was the children's ministry leader there, and our numbers were 244 members and 31 children. And in 2016, our numbers were 248 members and 31 children. I think it was 35 actually when I was there, and 31 now. So, but basically, and this is just a statistic from, you know, June. So we basically maintained our numbers, but we were still a bit worried about what do we do. And one of the suggestions to come out of the group of elders and other people who were there and interested was, why don't we start a young adult service? And I just couldn't contain myself. I had to stand up and say, should I slit my throat now or later? Do you not understand we cannot keep producing more and more services that are television-style services? They work for many people. They work for the churched people. But out there in New Zealand and in Australia, 95% of people are not churched, or they are de-churched. In other words, they've left the church, or they are unchurched. And we need to think about ways we can be church for those people. So I'm doing a workshop, I think, tomorrow on reimagining church. We need to reimagine church in other ways. It's not about throwing out the old, but it's about seeing that we need to not just have the way it is now. We need to think about it in other ways. Leonard Sweet talks about this. Very interesting YouTube clips that you can look at that he talks about the epic generation. The epic generation needs it to be experiential. They need to participate. They are image-rich, so they need, you know, to engage with images and video and story and those kind of things. And they need to be connected. They want to be in a relationship, and they actually want to make a difference. And if you read the research around millennials and why millennials are leaving the churches in droves, this same stuff comes out, I think. And, of course, we go back to our rugby story. That's why, because when we do things together, We create shared experiences and we create significant moments, and those significant moments are so vital as we form into disciples of Christ. So who would like to read this for me? I'd just like to change voices a bit. You look kind of mad.
Yes. Age segregation, a worrying Western society. While there is place for some level of age segregation, persistent segregation can sow distrust and prejudice between generations, cause different age groups to be blind to each other's needs, and rob people of a chance to learn from those younger and older than them.
This is a very worrying Western societal trend. Does it sound remotely familiar to you? Does distrust sound familiar? Does prejudice sound familiar? Being blind to each other's needs sound familiar? We've overdone it. We wanted to protect kids from working in factories 100 years ago, so we created Sunday schools. But we've excluded them so much from the life of the community that they don't feel like they have anything to contribute, and they don't have as much opportunity to learn. Now, this is also a worrying Western societal quote from a psychologist. So now you have to click this rock in order to make it into a movie. I don't know why I have a picture of this.
Is there a book you'd like to look at with John? Here's Horton Hatton. Here's a who. Here's a walrus one.
Here, honey. What's your name?
Max.
Huh?
Max.
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 Oh, Matt.
Max. Max.
Matt.
Max.
Oh, Mac.
No, Max.
Max. Max.
Bye bye.
Don't you think they grow up pretty fast for being two?
What do you think is going to happen to you guys? You think you're going to stay 3 and 4 and 5 forever?
Never. Yeah.
You have to be a grown up sometime.
No.
No?
I don't know if I can do it. I can't even do it.
There you go.
Can
you get it in there?
Keep
working on it.
Can I sing? Ave Maria. You know, how are you? As you love somebody and they give you something, you know how hard it hits you in your heart. Hard ones. Running out of eyes.
Here, and we invited you to come and celebrate happiness with us.
There is only one time to be happy, and that time is now.
These guys have, what, about 50, 60, 70, 80 more years of collecting happiness. So you guys have about 80 years or more to look forward to and get more happy things.
It's true.
Just don't step on our foot.
Jumped right up here,
right there.
Yeah, those years go by in a hurry.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
And it's so slow.
I guess they're having Gwen's funeral tomorrow.
It's tomorrow, yeah. I told Gwen, I said, Gwen, I want you to know, I'm going to show up at your funeral wearing a clown nose. She loved her clown nose, you know?
Put your hands together for the graduating class of 2013.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, ladies.
Come again. Come when you can.
So, it's a worrying Western societal trend, but Western society is getting it. And you'll see more and more stories of that if you Google it. Children in kindergartens. And so hopefully we can get it too. Let's see if we don't kind of drop this, you know, our unique kind of heritage as to who we are as a community of faith, and can find ways to connect and to share and to learn together and to have significant moments together. So this is another little 4-minute clip from New Zealand that was on the news recently.
With a welcome this sweet, you might think it's their grandies arriving at Anchorage Park Kindy. But no one's even related.
Hello, sweetheart. Hey, I haven't seen you for a long time.
These are residents from the local retirement home.
This is lovely fun, isn't it? I can't go as high as you are.
Embracing what 91-year-old Jocelyn calls her second childhood.
Oh, it feels good. Being a kid again.
But this is much more than child's play.
Hey, do you think that's a pretty good cake?
It's part of growing evidence that putting the very old and the very young together works wonders.
Jocelyn, how much is Isabel gonna turn?
Isabel's turning 90.
10!
Okay. Another 10?
But the age gap's no barrier here. The kids just want people to play with.
Happy birthday, dear Jocelyn.
What did you make them for their birthdays?
Cakes with Play-Doh, but you can't eat it.
You can't?
You can't eat the Play-Doh.
Go and help, Reese.
Oh. I think they think that some of these old girls are a little bit of fun after all, you see. Not old dullies, you know.
I wasn't quite sure how I would mix with the little wee ones, because as soon as you come and they smile, it's totally different.
We tried to ask the kids what they get out of it. They were too busy having fun.
Hello!
Residents from 7 retirement villages are now visiting Auckland's kindies, and it's all down to 91-year-old Papa Jim. He's been on his own since losing his wife 20 years ago.
I've been through a very sad, tough time. And I used to walk past the kindergarten, and I had heard the happy laughter of little children at play. I thought it might be good to be with them.
The kindy gave him a trial.
And he built his house of straw.
That was 4 years ago. The retired minister's been visiting every week since.
And the little pig ran away to his brother's house. It's like a visiting grandfather. They love somebody to show things to and to make pictures for. And I know there's one little girl who hasn't got a father at all. And she sometimes snuggles up to me and we have a little talk.
Experiences like this are increasingly important. The population's ageing with one of the highest proportions in residential care in the world.
It makes them feel useful and it makes them feel valued, and we know that that's really important to mental health.
These guys have, what, about 50, 60, 70, 80 more years of collecting and happy.
Seattle's gone further still, building a childcare centre inside a rest home.
And you would hope that into the future, those sorts of early interactions might affect how they feel about aging and older people. So I think it's these kind of creative solutions we need to be looking at to actually encourage generations to mix more.
And my mother made me this costume.
This kindy says they underestimated just how much the elderly have to offer.
That was a long, long time ago.
They bring not just a link to the past, but something today's working parents don't always have: time.
What can you teach this generation?
To keep themselves busy without having to have so many toys, use their imagination a bit more. I hope it fits. Haven't had a crayon before.
You can almost see imaginations blossoming here, young and old.
It brought me from despair to hope. And I found by coming here, I found a new family.
So lovely, isn't it?
So lovely. It's the Kiwi news. Yeah, so we're going to think about this. You know, how can we reclaim some of this? Even think about storytelling. How do we invite some of our older people to come in and tell their stories, their faith stories, to share that with young people? So let's reclaim our faith roots.
let's think about what does it mean to be intergenerational? How can we do more stuff together? And how can we be countercultural? And let's turn back that clock. So we're not saying, and I think I mentioned this at the beginning, we're not saying we're going to throw out the baby and the bathwater. There is plenty of evidence that there is validity in teenagers going away on a camp or on an outing, having a great lot of fun and social times. There's validity in teenagers learning together, in worshipping together, and the same applies to children. However, there is that stark reality of research that says if that's all they do, they're much less likely to hold on to their faith as they go into adulthood. So it needs to be a mix. It needs to be both the baby and the bathwater. Now, this is a conversation I had with the church in Dunedin in Auckland. It's quite a long video, so if you want to have a nod off in the middle, I won't pick on you. It's 15 minutes. And but I like it because it captures the essence of what this actually means. And let me tell you a little story about this, is that they didn't start off intending to be intergenerational. They started off intending to be a cool breakfast church for like 30-somethings. And they're probably people almost that didn't have children. This is a university town in Eden. It's our deep south. In fact, in the Presbyterian Church, we call this our Vatican City because there's so many Presbyterian churches in this town. So he started off, and I'll tell you his story here, but he didn't really intend to be intergenerational, and it sort of came around almost by default. Then he talks about the joys of that. So this is a movie that you have to take off your screen, and we have to stop it now, and all technology stuff, but sit back, enjoy it, and if it gets too long, sit on a nap, and then wake up again and pick up the next bit. I'm going to sit down too so I can watch. It'll sort of take
So Barry, 13 years ago, you fulfilled a dream and planted Thatch, a breakfast church at the Coronation Hall. And it's a story that's inspired me, and I've actually shared it with many churches around New Zealand and even over the world. So it's a story that inspires people to think about what does it mean to be church and how can we discover new ways of being church. And in 2006, Jane Davis, who was the children's ministry worker at the time at Highgate Presbyterian, your mother church, phoned me in a bit of a panic and said the leaders of Batch have phoned her to say, can she come and advise them on what to do with all the children that are rocking up at this 8:30 breakfast church? And she said, what do I tell them? And I said, well, Jane, I'm going to send you a book called Children at Worship, Congregations in Bloom. And I think it'll inspire you. It'll inspire you to try and get them not to start a Sunday school, but to welcome and value children in the community of faith at all times. And apparently, that's what happened. And today, I would say that Batch is one of the few truly intergenerational churches in our denomination. And I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about that, a bit about your philosophy of welcoming and including children and embedding that intergenerational ethos in Batch.
I'd forgotten those days with Jane, but no, we were stuck. And I don't think we really thought it would grow quite the way it did or as fast as it did. And interestingly, being in the school hall, we thought that these would be children from the school, from the primary school. And yeah, some of them were, but actually What surprised us was that these were children who belonged to adults who had been at church, who had left. And not just our church, but a number of churches. And one of the reasons that they'd left is that they felt almost persecuted bringing their children, and they were worried that they were going to be nervous. And even if the kids were just being normal in a church environment, they felt so awkward because they couldn't enjoy the service, so they stopped coming. And then they got wind of the fact that we didn't mind that it was a bit noisy, that I would say things from the front of the from the front, like, "Hey, listen, can you hear the children?" And people could hear the noise. And I would say, and still say often, the day we can't hear that, we've died, because that's our heartbeat. And suddenly their shoulders went down and they relaxed, and it's actually all right just for these kids to be normal. And it grew from there, really. But within that, we had to do some practical things. For example, we needed high chairs. If they're having breakfast, well, the children are in high chairs, or in chairs and tables high enough for them to be able to reach the Weet-Bix or the fruit salad or whatever. And so there were practical things. We did need to set up little areas where it was all right for them to spread themselves a little bit more, because they do take a bit of space sitting as a family. And look at that, I'm sorry, we're going to have to get rid of the cat. Sorry, we're not cat friendly. Oh,
man.
I'm going to have to work. Oh, it's going to come right back. We'll work around the cat. Oh, yeah, but for goodness sake. So, yes, we had to work around logistical things, as well as re-educating people. When others joined us that didn't have children, we would make it quite clear that this for us was normal. And these weren't statements made once or twice, but quite regularly. In fact, still now, after 514 services, I still say, at the beginning of a service, please, parents, it's fine to talk to the children during the service and explain what's going on. So anyone joining us without children realise that's what we expect. So we found then that if we were going to have the children stay in, there needed to be something for them to do other than to eat. And we are a lectionary church, that way I don't have my hobby horses and have to follow a prescription. And we've personally found the program Seasons of the Spirit really helpful, because they've got good resources for me or whoever's leading or speaking, but they also have really good resources for the children as well. So the children actually stay in for the whole service. I do the children's talk, and we'll spend time together near the beginning of the service speaking with them up front. But then they go to activity tables within the body of the hall. We have activities for preschoolers and then from school age onwards. And something wonderful has happened because we've been there long enough doing it now. The children who were those preschoolers are now helping lead these kids. And this was a bit that told us we had it right, because we found in traditional churches that the children would go to Sunday school and then never come back to church. If we send children out to Sunday school and then expect them, when we think they've been house trained, to come back, we've got another thing coming. They weren't coming back. But because these children have never been sent away, they've never felt like second class citizens, they've never considered that whatever was happening in the body of the service, they weren't grown up enough for, they've never left. And so they're now helping with the children. And so some of these kids are now, 13, 14, 15 years old. They've always been with us. The other thing that we've noticed is that when children come to us for the first stages, they can be quite noisy. But without even explaining to them what's expected, other children understanding the worship space, what's going on, and knowing when it's time to be a bit quieter or when it's okay to get up and move around a bit more, they're modelling something so special for these other kids. And we don't have to tell them. It's only a few weeks before they realise, well, I want to do it like they're doing it. They're self-modelling and self-monitoring themselves, these children, which we think is fantastic. The downside of all of this is that if you can't really have big, deep conversations with the kids like you may if you've taken them out, is that there mightn't be the depth you'd have at a Sunday school. Mm. So we've had to teach the parents to be first teachers, and we speak that language. I send homework home sometimes by email and say, look, I'm going to need to follow up on this. I'm going to send you a little resource that you might find handy if you... kids go off to bed tonight, you might want to flesh this out. On a more formal basis, we've used the Faith Box series. It's the grants, isn't it? The grant, yes. Yeah. And we've probably, only for 2 years, but we found that really successful as well, training parents to be first teachers.
And I gather there's kind of families who come together once a month as well.
Yes, yes.
Your batch community, yes. And actually do it together and, yes, have done it together.
Yep, totally. So, and that tends to be relational and geographical. We've got quite a group coming up from down the harbour, and so they meet down there. But apart from that, it's relational.
What I'm interested in is kind of intergenerational friendships. So, you know, so much research says that children need older friends and older people need young friends. Does that happen naturally in the batch community, or is it something that has to be facilitated?
We've not facilitated it. And so you've given me a really good idea, because possibly we could be. Because we do have babies through to people in their 90s, that batch, so, and we're 50-50 male-female split, so we could be adding granddads or grandmas or whatever. Sitting at breakfast, we do see it, but it's just because food does that, doesn't it? Mm. And so we've got some older folks who just love to give parents a break and actually will supervise the children during breakfast while the parents can be off having a coffee in the service with someone else, but it's not structured.
But it is working. Adults, yeah, know young people's names and vice versa.
Yeah, the name thing's taken pretty seriously. Although it's a lot of the children, if they're new, they'll have they will have name tags on. But we that often falls by the wayside. So these folks, they just ask, you know, if they don't know. Yeah, I've never really thought. Yeah, that's happening naturally, actually.
Mm. Well, I think, yeah, as you say, you do eat together, which is one thing.
Yeah.
Do you play together as a community? I mean,
yeah, we do. Yeah, picnics. And, for example, just before Christmas, we hired a train and went up the coast. They dropped us off near the beach. We went down to the beach, egg and spoon races, picnics, walked up the road, got back on the train and came back to town. I mean, we took the whole train and we made it possible financially for people to go. And, we do that sort of thing as much as possible. We don't talk about ourselves as a congregation. We use the word family. That just rolls off anyone's tongue. And if someone joins us, we talk the language like, welcome to the family. Mm. So, yeah, that's our language.
So what would you say to churches that are quite attached to, you know, sending children out? Is there one thing you could say to them, or...? Could you recommend this way of being, really?
It's a it's a whole culture change.
Mm.
It needs to be intentional. If you're going from a Sunday school system to all age or intergenerational, you probably won't like it for the first year. It'll be noisier. It'll be awkward and difficult. I think it would be tricky without the meal. But you will attract people. But also, the smiles, the joy that the folks get from seeing the children actually alongside them doing their thing, and the way that they sometimes come across and snuggle up to sort of a stranger and say, just made this. It's fantastic. From up front, you have to cut through that, because you've still got a story about Jesus to tell, and you've got songs to sing and praise to prayers to pray and all of that. But you just, so, and again, if someone wants to change from the old way to this way, the leaders would find that tricky, but it's well worth persevering with. I think the food helps as well, but that's another cultural shift.
When you dreamed Batch, because I know you did dream,
yes,
it came to fruition. Did you dream an intergenerational community, or did it sort of, you know, come to you as a gift from God, in the process?
After a lifetime, you know, at that stage, nearly 50 years of being churched, my thinking was around Sunday school, because it's all I knew. But actually, in the school hall where we went, there was no room to have it. So I think that's, if the dream was of God and the place was quite a, we were told quite clearly where it was to be, God knew there was no space. I believe for that. And I believe there was possibly chuckles as God saw us trying to figure it out and make phone calls to people like Jane and you, you know.
But you were open.
Yeah, totally. And again, I know I started with this, but as people found it easy to come back to church with children, because no one was going to make it feel, you feel awkward or difficult if it was your kid that was making a noise, where they could be meaningfully occupied within the space just over there. I'm still at church, but I can see them. They didn't have to leave the room. If they were nervous, they could still come across to me and show me what they're doing, and then I could see in the back. It was worth it, immediately worth it, because we were all in the same space. And we were hearing the same story. You see, it is, although I'm talking to the adults, you don't think their spirits are not still open as they're doing the activity to the adult explanation for the story I've just shared with the children. I mean,
there's research that says that children sitting in the same space doing art or whatever they're doing recall more of the sermon than adults do who are sitting doing nothing.
And I guess that's the messy church thing, isn't it? Where let's do church but be doing something at the same time. Yeah. So, it's never more telling than, of course, that when I put a video clip on or we'll listen to a piece of music and
stop.
Yeah, and look up, because they're that way. That they're taking this stuff, and I'm sure they are. But that peace of mind for the parents is fantastic as well.
Yeah, that's great.
Done?
And dinner's at 5:30. Is it? I don't know. Am I Australian and New Zealand? Yeah.
So dinner's in 15 minutes. So, Rob, if we could just have the next slide of the PowerPoint up, because there's just five questions I just wanted you to give to a small group, so just think about, just for 5 minutes, just about how that felt like for you. I mean, just from this perspective, like, how many of you found that seriously challenging? And how many of you felt like you were probably preaching for the group here? Well, that's what happens in children's ministry. And the rest are sort of like open to the conversation. So there's no kind of real kind of silos that we're creating here. So just get into your small groups again, and just, you don't have to answer all these questions, but that's just kind of a guide of conversation as to, what do you think? So if you want to wrap up your conversations, Melissa, you come up here and get ready to do your announcements. Well, I think I love to hear animated conversations like that, because it means that you're not stunned or shocked.
or disengaged, hopefully. So this is the plan. The plan is dinner, and Melissa's got a few. There's another plan, but I'm gonna get off now and give them a chance. After dinner, we're going to look at culture change and think about how do you help your congregation move from one place to another. What are the kind of strategies around that and obstacles and a little bit of my own story of Kids Friendly Ministry in New Zealand around how we address that. So culture change after dinner, and so enjoy your meal and over to the team.
We're going to continue our time looking and considering all things intergenerational, and we welcome Jill back. Hope you've all had a good feed and that ready for some more groups. That'll be great. Thanks, Jill.
I just got to get my ticky. Yeah, that we're all up and running. All good. Thank you, Rob. So who's at the back who's going to read this for us in a big loud voice? Beth.
Thank you. Intensely intergenerational. Intergenerational churches foster all age relationships, faith sharing and storytelling. Incorporate all generations in worship, develop service projects that involve all ages, and engage all generations in learning together. For these churches, seeing intergenerational is a way of life. It is an integral element of their
culture. It is who they are. Very well done, Ruthie. Thank you. Yeah, you see, becoming this way. That's a new one. Haven't had that one before, have we? It's the techie man. Testing. It's not to be intergenerational. You have to be intentional. It will not happen if there's not intent from a whole lot of people. It can't, unfortunately, just be intent from you, the converted. We now have to talk about how do we convert others and how do we get them to be intentional. And you see, it's not just something that you do in your community of faith. It's something that you become. So it's very much part of your ethos, who you are. So we thought what we'll do to start is think about how do we move? How do we think back to that church that we defined earlier, and wherever it sat on that continuum of cross, multi, and inter, and say, well, how can I help move our church from this place to this place, even if it's only a few steps along, because this isn't like, as we know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and this is the same thing applies to this. So how can we do that? So we thought we'd start at the very beginning, because it's a very good place to start. When you sing, you begin with?
A-B-C.
And we give throw D in too, just for fun. Okay, so the first thing you need to do is analyze. And whatever you want to use, there's loads and loads of tools for analysis. So, you can use the SWOT analysis, which is the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Or some people call it the COWS analysis, which is challenges, opportunities, weaknesses, strengths. So anyway, whatever you want, there's loads of tools. And if you don't know any tools, then email me or ask Wes Phil, ask someone who does. to think about how can we actually analyze where we are right now. And think about where we'd like to get to, okay? And part of that is thinking about those things like strengths, weaknesses. So if you think about some strengths, you might think, well, what happens now in our community of faith where I notice that people really enjoy being together? So it's probably not morning tea, because often people are really grumpy about children at morning tea, but it might be a church picnic. Or it might be the church camp. Heaven forbid if any of you organize a church camp where they separate the children off at any time, at all, during the church camp. Wash your mouth out, okay? Because that is one opportunity where we do not need to separate children. People have even said to me, can you come to our church camp and run a children's program, please? I'm like, excuse me? Which eye do you want me to stab first? I mean, it's like unbelievable. Someone said to me, what, can you please, don't even ask. She said, what did you say? Someone said to me, this is years back too, when I wasn't nearly as stroppy as I am now. They said, our church is having its 100th anniversary celebrations. Could Kids Friendly please come and run a program for the children while we have our celebratory service? I was like, what planet are you born on? You're celebrating 100 years. Can you imagine the stories that people have to tell in their community around this community of faith that's been going for 100 years? Like, how did it start? You know, what's its story? And how do we invite children into that story? No, they didn't want to invite children into the story. They wanted to put them out in the hall and get kids running to run a program. Get that off my chest. I said, no, I won't be doing that. Why don't you? Anyway, they took on our advice. Okay, so that's thinking about analysis. You know, what opportunities are there for you to just change things a little bit? Because you know what they say, hey, and I don't know if this happens in your context, but in our context we have loads of old churches with pews and pulpits and organs and all that kind of stuff. And they always say if you want to get rid of the pulpit or anything up the front, you just move it 1 inch each week. So it just keeps moving. So don't ever what you do try and move anything overnight, because our church tried to move the pulpits and it took us 3 years. We couldn't unfortunately move them 1 inch each week. So, you know, think about what are the opportunities here for me that I can actually just do something a little bit different. And worship might be one of the opportunities, depending how much, you know, you work closely with your minister or pastor. Because that is one opportunity where you can just tweak a few things to make some part of worship more intergenerational. It doesn't mean that today we have children, you know, go out to Sunday school or not even come into worship, go start straight in the children's program. But next Sunday, children are going to be in, because I've heard this woman from New Zealand, and she says they should be. And so, right, next Sunday it's all happening. That's not going to work. It's got to be really, really slow, and you've got to take people on the journey with you, because if people don't own that journey, you're just going to be pushing uphill. So think about those things. You know, what can you change? Talking about worship and making incremental changes in worship, I wanted to just alert you to an article that Chris Barnett gave me 2 years ago when I was at here, Leaders to Go. And it was actually a magazine, Equip, which was basically featuring a whole lot of articles around ministry with children and families. And in that magazine, I found this article called Welcome the Children by a woman called Alison Sampson. And at the time, she was at South Yarra Baptist Community Church in Melbourne, and now she's moved. But it was a most fantastic article. It's 2 pages. If you can't find it, you know, through Google, which you probably will, you can look on our website under intergenerational, and the article's there. It's called Welcome the Children, and she just talks about her philosophy of welcoming children into worship and how she arrived at this church, and the children went out to the hall with some very tired and obliged leaders, and she decided she didn't want her children doing that because she had 3 of her own children, and so she decided that they would stay in worship. And she talks about how she interrogated worship in order to integrate. So everything they did in worship, she interrogated and said, how does this meet the needs of all my people, not just the children or just the elderly? Anyway, that's just a little side advert. Okay, so you also need to identify your weaknesses and your threats. And let me tell you, one of the greatest threats to you is going to be people. As Barry said, they won't like it. They won't like it for a whole year. So how do you get them to keep going? You know what I mean? Some people are going to be very nasty to you. So that is a big threat. So you need to work out, who are those people? Who are those people that hold a lot of power in your church? And how are you going to get them, you know, alongside on this journey? And that's a big question. So B, balance. And I think I should have added to balance baby in the bathwater, because it all goes together. Is that whole thing of just be balanced about it. Like, don't just decide that you're going to get rid of all children's only ministries or youth only ministries. Actually, just decide what are the things we can tweak, what are the things we can change without threatening too many people. Because if you threaten too many people, they'll get really fearful and then they'll get really nasty. And we talked about the research about people, you know, children and youth who only go to children and youth program, and how their faith often isn't sustainable. And so children and all people need a web of relationships. They need opportunities to be together in a whole different lot of ways. So if we see the chiefs, You need to decide who are the chiefs in your church. But every church does have chiefs. Sometimes they're formal chiefs, so they might, you know, be the minister. In our context, we would have what we call the parish council or the session. And they're the chiefs. They're the people who make the rules, make the decisions. But there also are people who are not, don't have the title of chief, who actually are chiefs, who actually hold power. Because, I mean, we had a chief in our church. I mean, we weren't allowed to cut down a tree because she said, no, you're not cutting that tree down. And when I said to the minister, well, why don't you just tell her to, you know, whatever. I said something a little bit rude, but I won't say it now. He said, she gives a lot of money to our church. I mean, at least he was honest, eh? But so she was a chief, even though she wasn't an elder. So you have to win over the chiefs, but, you know, you have to win over your leadership because leadership have to be vested in this in order for change to come about. So it doesn't matter how much you think this is an important thing to do, how passionate you are about it. If you can't get your senior pastor or whatever you call it in your context to start a conversation with you about it, then you're going to be lost. And then you have to start feeding the other conversations into it. So it may be books if the person's a book person, but it may be another minister or pastor who gets it. So my kind of one of my little kind of tactics at the moment is Rob's minister gets it. And he comes from a context where for many, many years I would have probably said that was one of the least intergenerational churches. But Rob's minister has huge credibility in our denomination. Like people like, you know, he's a good guy, this guy. And he gets it and he's done his sabbatical thesis on intergenerational. So now I say, have you read Hamish Galloway's report? So if you haven't read Hamish Galloway's report, Google it. And it's all around Deuteronomy 6. And it's a holistic thing, isn't it, around children, youth, and all generations. So often a minister will read another minister's report or hear it from another minister. So there's all those kind of tactics. But you have to win over the chiefs. And the other C is celebrate. Like, you know, you need to look for the small little wins and celebrate them. So when you see an older person, you know, help out when a child gets restless or, you know, tantrumy or whatever, that's a win. When you see an older person know a child's name, that's a win. When you see a child interact and talk to an older person, that's a win. So celebrate the little wins and celebrate them with your congregation too. Hey, things are starting to change. Let's celebrate. So, and D is doing things differently. So now, Phil, where's Phil? I need you to quickly hand out these things because I forgot to hand them out. So this is one of these books. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was John Roberta, where he talks about intergenerational is not doing a whole lot of different things. So it's not saying, oh, we need to do a whole lot of different things now. We need to start a Mercy Church, or we need to start a Breakfast Church, or we need to start a... It's actually initially saying, what things can we do differently? This is a sort of subtle difference there, do things differently. So I thought while he's handing those out, I will tell you a story about a minister who did things differently rather than doing a whole lot of different things. So this minister was called to a little church in a kind of rural town in New Zealand. He was a Baptist minister, and he said, and this was quite some years ago, so it's before his time, he said to the people who were calling him to be minister, I'll only come to this church if you let me work on it becoming an intergenerational church. And so, and I need the other ones handed out too, Phil. So everyone needs a one with things on it and one blank one. Doesn't really matter which, how it goes. Anyway, so he said, oh, no, I'll only come here if you let me be intergenerational. So they said, oh, yeah, no, not a problem at all. And so he said, are you sure about this? Because this is quite a big journey we're going to take. And they said, no, that's all good. We want you to be our minister, and we're open to doing things in different ways. So he arrives and he becomes the minister of this church. And the first thing he announces is that, you know, we want to become an intergenerational church, and I really believe that children and young people should be in worship with us. And so we're going to change the way we do things. We're going to have a breakfast-style church, and we're going to sit around tables. And we're going to all be together, learning and praying and singing and playing, and it's all going to happen together. And I went, oh, not sure about that. He said, look, no, it's good. And I've spoken to the leaders. We're going to give it a go. So he gave it a go. And as Barry said, people didn't like it very much. There was lots of muttering. And
gossiping in the car park and emails being sent around and getting a bit abusive. And he thought, what am I going to do? How am I going to get these children to see, get these people to see this? So he came up with this idea. He said, what if I divide the entire church into friendship groups? And I'm going to ask them to go on this journey with me for 6 months. I'm going to ask, tell everyone they're in a friendship group, and each friendship group will have a coordinator who organizes friendship events. And I'm going to ask my people to commit to it. Even if they don't like it, just try it. Try it for 6 months. It's once a month for 6 months. We want you to get together with your group. Your coordinator will phone you and say, we're going for a bushwalk, we're going for a picnic, or we're having a board game evening. And I want you to do it. And that's all I'm asking you. Just do it. And he said that within 2 months of the friendship group meetings, they'd only met twice, he noticed a subtle change in worship. That when people came into the church, instead of going to their little cliques or muttering, they would sit down at the table, and there was Harry, who was 78, sitting at the table, and next minute little Johnny came running in and said, Uncle Harry, Uncle Harry. And they'd been in the bush the afternoon before, and they talked about insects and enjoyed this bushwalk together. And he said it was amazing how the culture of the church started to change because people became friends. The group wasn't for Bible study. The group wasn't for prayer. The group wasn't even for pastoral care. It was just for friendship. Of course, all those other things started coming out of the groups. But the groups were from 0 to 99, and he allocated people into groups, and that was their group. So that was, I think, was a good example of doing things differently. Now, what I want you to do is your own little assessment. There's two pages you've been given. One is an audit of worship. And I want you to do an audit, just a very quick audit, like 2 minutes, down. If you had to think about your own context and how intergenerational your worship is, just go down and see how the scoring goes and get to the bottom and give yourself a score. No one's going to ask you what it is and put you to shame. Just do it. And I'll tell you what to do next.
Ask me questions if you don't understand what I'm saying.
Indication of where you're at in your own context, and there'll be other questions that you probably could add to that. So John Roberta, in his book Generations Together, shares a vision of a congregation that seeks to be intentionally intergenerational, and he says that he sees it as it happening in five spheres. So he talks about caring, so around pastoral care and caring for the world and caring for whatever comes fits into that caring, so environment, how do we care together? How do we celebrate, which is worship, together? How do we learn together? How do we pray together? And how do we serve together? So what I want you to do is I want you, you've all got a blank page now. I want you to find what yours says at the top. So this one is a caring one. It says, how well does your church involve, cultivate, and facilitate caring relationships across generations in the congregation and community? Someone else will have a praying one. Someone else will have a serving one. And someone else will have a learning one. So I want you to get into groups again in wherever you're sitting. Just find people who have the same one as you. So if you're learning, find people who also have learning. Yes.
So what's happened is that the group up in this end of the world has a prayer one in this quarter of the
okay,
room.
Okay, cool.
And so you'll find that like people have in the quarter of the room and the same one.
So good. So it's quite easy to get into groups then. So again, get into groups five or six, however many you want in your group. And the idea is that you will come up with questions. So if you look at the worship one, you will come up with similar statements that people could mark themselves on. So your group is creating an audit based on your topic. So if your topic is learning, then you're going to ask questions, and you're going to create some questions to write down on that piece of paper or statements about learning. So you're going to say, for example, you might say, does our church have any all-age home groups? That might be a question, okay? So you have to come up with questions or statements that people can mark themselves against under your category. So it might be learning or praying or serving. Does that make sense? Right. Do you want to draw those discussions to a close?
do 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 do. We were made to thrive. So now the idea is this, that you take the you take someone in your group who has the best writing, which wouldn't be me if I was in a group. So you take the best scribes example and you drop it off at the registration table. Because what we'll do is put all of these audits up. So we'll have worship, hearing, learning, serving up. Once up wherever Phil knows where. So the best scribes needs to be dropped off to Julie, and then we will type it up and stick it up. Oh, okay. And on a completely different topic, a blue Subaru AQB 519 has their lights on. AQB 519. Blue Subaru. Anyone there? They would have had their lights on all day if that's the case. Right. So just to finish this little bit about doing things differently. So basically, as you think about making these chats, just drop it off when we leave, because we only got another 15 minutes to go. But please don't get it dropped off, because otherwise I will have to sit for another hour and come up with an audit. I sat there going to write all the audits, and after writing the worship one, thought, actually, I think I've got a really good group of people who could do this for me. So thank you for that. So, yeah, doing things differently is creating intergenerational experiences, infusing intergenerational experiences and relationships into existing things that you always already do, and connecting, or someone very famous once said, called Tammy Tolman, colliding the generations intentionally. So a little bit of stuff around change, moving your culture. How are you going to move your church from one place to the next? The first thing you need, this is what you need if you want to bring about change. Firstly, you need dissatisfaction. Oh, no, sorry. Got some other slides here that don't on my little sheet. I need some readers. Who's going to read this? What do most people think about change? Nikki.
Most people, churches, change just enough to get away from their problems, not enough to solve them.
Good. Sally.
Most people, churches, want to change their circumstances to improve their lives instead of changing themselves to improve their circumstances.
Whoa. Ooh, who's at the back? Who can I get? Where's Jeff? Jeff, my new friend.
Most people, churches, do the same thing the same way and expect
different results. Well, well, well. Who else will read to me? Well, I don't know the rest of your names. Sorry. Good.
Most people, churches, are willing to change not because they see their lives, but because they hear
them. So, that brings us on to this one. What do we need in order to affect change? And that whole thing about we change because not because we see the light, but because we feel the heat, is a very, very powerful and pertinent thing. Because if you don't have dissatisfaction with the status quo, you can't change. So if your church is going along swimmingly, having everyone separated, it's going to be much harder for you to bring about change. You've got to find enough people in your community or your church or, you know, your congregation who say, you know, we're not really entirely happy with what's going on, a bit like our church, you said. Look, we're not in decline, but we've been the same figures for 15 years, and we need to talk about this before we go into decline. So you do need that dissatisfaction with the status quo in order to provide momentum for change. And you need it, going back to those chiefs thing, you need the chiefs to see this. You need the chiefs to say, actually, we are dissatisfied. And then you need vision. So you need a group of people who can dream. And they can say, okay, so we're not satisfied with how it is now, and these are the things we're not satisfied with. How do we want it to be? How can we dream a new way of being together? So when you help churches or leaders think about vision, It's not a statement. It's not words. It's actually vision. It's actually ask them to explain, how do they want to see it? What do you want to see in our church? Use your senses and then say to them, what do you want to hear? What do you want to feel? So when you talk to anyone about vision, use the senses. Don't get them stuck up on words and writing statements and things, because that's not really helpful. That's not really what vision's all about. And it's this that provides direction as you move forward. And then you need passion. You need passion. You need people to say, I believe in this, and this is going to happen, and this is why it's going to happen, because I'm going to get behind it, and I'm going to get a team with me, and we're going to make it happen. And Terry was so sweet to me. He said to me, how do you, like, not get frustrated? And I said, oh, trust me, Terry, I get frustrated. But I also have passion and energy, and, like, that's what keeps me going, and I think the Holy Spirit's part of that passion, you know. So, but you do need that. You need that passion, and you need a positive climate, and that's why you need to celebrate the wins, and you need to keep the naysayers away. And that's, again, why you need the whole lot of chiefs invested, because if it's only a few of you who are going on this journey, the naysayers will get you down. They'll drag you down with them. You've got to have enough critical mass in your church who get it, who say, yes, this is what we're going to do. Yes, we're going to give it a go. Yes, we probably won't like it for a year, but hey, we're going to give it a go because we know that we should. We're going to go back to our heritage. We're going to go back to all those reasons we had in the beginning. So just a little bit of my story. So that was my story, this whole thing about culture change. And I wouldn't have, you know, if when I started this ministry in New Zealand called Kids Friendly Churches, if they had said to me, hey, we want you to change the culture of the Presbyterian Church in New Zealand, well, I would have swum to Australia. I mean, there's no ways I would have agreed to any job where someone told me I had to change the culture of an organization like that. I mean, how do you do that? So it was quite interesting that actually with hindsight, when I actually went to a lecture at Knox on culture change, I thought, oh, that's what we do. We do all that stuff, you know. So it was kind of like a very much a God thing, because it wasn't like I went in as a change manager. I actually went in my background is actually public relations and communications, so there is an element of change management in that. But I certainly didn't know anything about change management. But so we start off with the story of dissatisfaction. So our church is in decline. We did a AC Nielsen research project to ask New Zealanders in their 30s with children what they thought about the church, what their expectations were of the church, perceptions, and what came out of that research was like, oh my goodness, we have completely missed the mark. Like people were saying, you know, we think churches should be places of community networking. We think churches should have their doors open every day of the week, reaching out to community. We want to come to churches. We want to come to play groups. We want to come to holiday programs. We want to be part of a church community, but we don't really want to come on Sunday. Why would we come to worship and be separated from our children when we're separated all week? They told us some amazing things, and these were people who didn't go to church. And the one thing, as I said, churches aren't kids-friendly. And we went, oh, my goodness, we think we are, but they don't think we are. Now, they don't come to church, so how do they know we're not kids-friendly? Well, actually, who cares? That's their perception. So out of that research, our church was really dissatisfied with the status quo. They realized that here we are acting as if we're in a state of Christendom. We're thinking if we just put on a good old television-era church service, you know, with a good show and good music, people will come because it's attractional. But we can't do attractional church anymore because most people out there are not church people. So they don't want to come to our good show. So we had to really, really say we are not satisfied with the way we are doing things, and we are not meeting the community's needs as expressed in this research. And so it was from that that this ministry was born. Hey, let's start a ministry called Kids Friendly, and let's really do some navel-gazing about how kids-friendly really are churches, and how can we bring about change so they are more kids-friendly. And in that process, culture change happened. So this was our story, really. We grasped the urgency. We realized that we were in a critical missionary situation, that, yes, it's good to go to India and Vanuatu and all sorts of places and do missionary work, but actually New Zealand needs missionaries. And we as Christians, each one of us has to rise up and be a missionary. We're in a critical missionary situation. And our church needed to grasp the urgency and say, hey, we need to do something, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to go on this journey called Kids Friendly. So my job is to work with churches when they do grasp that urgency. The church will contact me and say, can you come and talk to our leadership about being a kids-friendly church? Now, in my mind, really, a kids-friendly church is an intergenerational church. But I was saying to the girls in my digs earlier that it was almost like we had neglected children for so long, even though we didn't think so. We thought as long as we have a holiday program or a play group or Sunday school, we're not neglecting them. But in a way, we had neglected them. They weren't equal and valued members of the community, the faith community. It was almost like we had to bring them back to the center, like Jesus did. He took the children and brought them into the center. We needed to do that. And it's taken us 14 years, and still many of our churches don't, but many of our churches do. And I think now we're at a place where we can actually start having an intergenerational conversation. I think before, we almost couldn't have that conversation because the children were out on the margins. So I go in and talk to churches who say, we are desperate, we are grasping the urgency, we are dissatisfied with the status quo. The reason I go into the session or the parish council is because I have to win over the chiefs. So Wendy might, not she wouldn't because she's not my denomination, but Wendy, if you were, might invite me to come and talk with you. And then I'd say, okay, Wendy, well, our strategy is we need to go and talk to the leaders now. And I go and share what I call the kids-friendly vision. And I share some of the stats and the figures and what's going on, what the research said. And the leadership then says, we're up for it. We're going to do it. We're going to become a kids-friendly church. So now you've got all the leaders agreeing at a leaders' meeting, and it can be up to 20 people, the session or parish council, that they're up for it. Even if they're never going to run a Sunday school, even if they're never, going to do anything with children, as leaders, they're going to support it. So we've got one of the chiefs. And then we ask the church to form what we call the kids-friendly dream team. So we say we need a vision, and we need people to dream this vision. And so we want to invite people onto this dream team. And the people who come on the dream team will be the minister, the children's ministry leaders, some parents, even children. So we take people into the dream team. And we often say to churches, if you've got any kind of, those permission, those gatekeeping kind of guys here or women, who are gonna just be a thorn in your side, put them on the dream team. Get them dreaming. Get them buying in rather than, resisting. So we've had a few property managers and financial guys on the dream team too. So the dream team comes together. They call the dream team, and we have a process where they review. They go through that whole analysis thing using a process and document that we've developed called the kids-friendly review, self-review. So it's not facilitated by me. They do it on their own. So they review, they dream, they come up with a vision, they set goals, and then they work out a plan for delivery. And then they actually apply to be assessed as a kids-friendly church, which means they put up a sign and they tell everyone, we're kids-friendly. And it's not just to tell the public, it's to tell themselves. We are kids-friendly. We made a commitment to be this way. Therefore, we need to keep reviewing and debriefing and thinking about what does that mean in this context. And so they have to be equipped and supported for action. That's where I come in as well. So I resource them if they need resourcing, help them get their safety stuff up and running, help them develop some community outreach if they don't have it. So that's about equipping and supporting them. But the leaders need to equip and support them too. And that's very much why we win over the chiefs. Because, people would say things to me like, before we sign up to be kids-friendly, we asked our session if we could have a notice board to put up the children's art and photos. And they just kept saying, no, no, no. We come back from our first dream team meeting, we present it to the session, and the first goal is to get a notice board up, and it's up the next day. So, it just kind of works. But you need to equip and support for action. And then you need to communicate and share for buy-in. So we have a whole lot of strategies around communication. How do we share with the church? This is a journey, the church we are going on. And we look for your encouragement and we look for your feedback. And we're on this journey and we're all on it together. And this is what you can do. You can get to know the name of three children. That's the first thing you can do. So we set the church congregation some tasks to become more kids-friendly. And then we celebrate the small and large wins, and we make it very clear that being a kids-friendly church is a core value. It's not something that you can just opt into or opt out of. It's a core value that you take on. So if you think about change, whether it's intergenerational change or I call it kids-friendly change because that's the journey I've been on, what do you think some of the hindrances are to change?
Change.
Change. Just change. We'll stop. What's that? People. Apathy. What did you say? Apathy. Yeah, apathy.
Tradition.
Tradition, yeah, holding on to tradition.
Fear.
Do some have satisfaction with what is?
Inertia.
Yeah.
Preciousness about how it things others or how it might not like it. But you need to find out who those people are. It's just someone might not like it.
Mm. So almost like fear here, rocking the boat.
Fear of failure.
Yeah, it is risky. Change. Mm. So this is what we found. We found, I don't know why I did that, but anyway, we found we found that people saw it as a program, not a practice. So they'd say, oh, we'll just sign up for that kids-friendly program. And to be fair, you know, when you do the review, it looks like kind of an audit and you can tick the boxes. And so we have to be really careful to tell people, this is not a program, this is a process you're using, but this is a practice so that everything you do will be, you know, tainted by this kids-friendly thing. All your practices will be like this. Uncommitted leaders. So I have had churches where the a person has come to me and said, oh, please, I need your help. I so want our leadership to become, you know, to agree to become a kids-friendly church. Please come and see my leaders. And I'll say, I'll come and even persuade the leaders to invite me. And then nothing ever happens. And I can see it. The leaders are not committed. But it's like, we'll just humor our children's ministry person because otherwise she might leave or he might leave. And absorbing responsibility of ministry to a few. So it's when the church doesn't get it that children's ministry is actually something holistic and that we all have a role to play in it, even if we never run a Sunday school lesson or a holiday program. And lack of understanding and appreciation of generations. So it's like, no, we want to do it our way. This is the way we've always done it. We don't actually really care about the songs you want to sing or the way you want to worship. And ignoring the biblical mandate of what it says about being a whole body of Christ. And self-centeredness. So it's all about me. It's actually not about the community at all. And some people say, it just seems really, really hard. Like, it sounds like really hard, and it is. It's really hard. It's not easy. I used to say in the early days, it's easy. No, it's not. It's really hard. But it's worth it. And it's seen as a destination, not a journey. So some churches go through this. They get the tick the box, put up the sign, and that's it. Don't ever look at it again. And that's a real challenge. So that's from me. And so we're going to finish as we started or as we went along the way with a little video to say that if it seems too hard to you, and let's face it, it's getting quite late, and you do realize you might think it's late for you, but actually it's 2 hours later for me, and I've been talking for a long time too. So I'm going to finish with a little video clip that says if it's too hard, you could change, you could actually move your church this way.
Power, 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 power